We forgot to tell our guests who are here today that if we ever run out of internet, they have to do karaoke halfway through. So your time's coming. You better pick a song. This morning I'm going to teach you a song as part of my sermon. So you can say, oh, here we go. Noel's teaching us like school kids again. No, but I want you to have faith in where I'm going to go with all of this. But teaching you might be a difficult one. So first question, I guess, is do all of you know how to spell?
No.
Perhaps I should say, can some of you remember how to spell?
Yes.
Good, okay. So can we have this up, guys? This one's not on the internet. All right, while we're starting, I can teach you the first bit. This is the first line. I am a C. Can you do that? One, two, three. I am a C. And the second line is, I am a CH. I am a CH. So let's put those two lines together. I am a C. I am a CH. Now here comes the tricky part. Next line is, I am a CHRISTIAN. Okay? All right? So let's do the first two. That'll give you courage for the next line. One, two, three. I am a C. I am a CH. I am a CHRISTIAN. Okay. And then it goes, and I have CHRIST in my HEART. Right, we'll do this slowly. And I have CHRIST in my HEART. Well, you got that. Here comes the punchline. And I will LIVEETERNALLY. What, says Fiona? Live eternally. I asked you whether you could spell. Oh, Alan got it. Right, okay, good. Did you get it, Julie? Oh, good, excellent. They know the song already, don't they? No, you don't? Oh, okay. So, let's go back to the beginning. I am a C. I am a CH. I am a CHRISTIAN. And I have CHRIST in my HEART, and I will LIVEETERNALLY. Whoa! That's not bad. The trick of the song is you're supposed to get faster and faster.
Oh, here we go.
Right, let's do it once more. And then I'll get on with the rest of the sermon. And it's really important that you remember what we've done in this song. So after three. Noel, it was very good of you to warm us all up on this. One, two, three. I am a C. I am a CH. I am a CHRISTIAN. And I have CHRIST in my HEART, and I will LIVEETERNALLY. Carmen, you collapsed. I saw it coming. Carmen's there. I've got this. I've got this. Why have I started off that way? And how does it connect in the readings? Earlier this year, one of the assemblies at Court Grammar, I taught this song because the song was about belonging to something and having a cheerleading type song. So if you understand the demographic of Court Grammar, from the area we draw from, there are very few people who are Christians. There are a lot of alternate people, and sometimes stuff that I teach about Christianity or other teachers teach about Christianity gets knocked back ludicrously. But we have to accept it because the demographic we're working in. For example, during the Easter Assembly this year, we were not allowed to mention that Jesus was in a tomb because one parent said their child had been taught that in Christian studies and that was going to scare them from going to the caves in Margaret River during the holidays. So that's the sort of environment I'm working with. Anyway, I taught this song to 500 students and staff. None of them had ever heard it before. When I visit the year ones, every time I enter the room, I will have one or more students rush up to me and not say hello, but start to sing the song. And they really fix their eyes upon me for me to join in with them. And it's really good. And at the start, it was the students had no idea what they were singing. They would say, "What does that big word mean?" Or, but they now know what I'm on about. And for me, that's the starting and finishing point for today. The meaning coming out of the parables of the sheep and the goats. I am a Christian and I have Christ in my heart and live eternally. And that getting to heaven is not like a scavenger hunt. Who's ever been on a scavenger hunt? Oh, heavens, come on. You remembered how to spell, you should be able to remember a scavenger hunt. I'm not talking about those car rallies where you end up divorcing your wife afterwards because you've disagreed on you should have turned left or right or stopped here. But a scavenger hunt, you get a list of things and you've got to go out and find them and then you tick them off, right? And at the end, you have your whole list checked. And is that the way it's going to be when we go to judgment? I think people get this imagery because it comes out of the Old Testament of the Ancient of Days opening up the books. And people believe that on one page in the book is your name and there's a list of good things and a list of bad things. And when the Ancient of Day adds them all up, you've got to hope you're going to be in the positive. All right? But you and I both know that Jesus died for our sins. And if we know that and we've asked for forgiveness, there is nothing in the negative. There's no way that God can refuse us. The Son of Man, Jesus, says, will be seated on the throne of glory and will gather all the nations of people before him. Then he'll separate people one from another as a shepherd separates sheep from a goat. Let's see. Yes, you once gave food to a hungry person. Check that one off. There was a time you gave a drink of water to the thirsty child. Check. You visited a jail. Check. Is that the way it's going to be? Is that really the way it's going to be? And if so, what is our motivation for doing it? Will we get credit in heaven for clothing the naked if we give our old stuff to the op shop or just to get it out of the house? I can remember Helen's aunt, whose funeral was this time last year, saying to me once, "I've done enough cake stalls, I don't have to do anything more in church now." Do we have people in our Christian communities who actually think like that? If they do enough cake stalls, they do enough teas and coffees, if they do this, they do that and do that, they have earned their way into heaven. And then they reach a stage where their passbook is full. Can you feed one hungry person and make it to heaven? Or toss a coin into one of the men who stand at Pinjarra Road intersection with their signs? There were three there the other day. Ah, good, there. There's my good deed for the day, my ticket to eternity with the sheep. What I think Jesus is saying is, what is saying in the song, you must have Christ in your heart. The feast day of Christ the King, which is today, ends our liturgical year. It's our pattern of worship. So we go from one gospel to the next gospel. So one gospel will feature next year, which is Mark, I think, yeah, Mark. It was created It was created by Pope Pius XI in 1925 because he was really concerned that after the horror of World War I, people were getting into secularism and denying the spiritual truths that the church could bring to them. And he believed that true peace was only possible under Jesus' kingship, and that Jesus must reign over our minds. In other words, we must have learning about God. He must be king over our hearts, which means we must share God's love, and that he must be king over our lives, which means we must imitate Jesus' ministry. Sheep and the goats. Religious freedom for many people today means that we can believe whatever we want in private. But when we enter the public square or the marketplace, we may not speak of anything that relates to our faith. Can you remember the old golden rule of going to parties? When you'd had so much to drink, you don't discuss politics and religion. Some of you can't even remember that. My goodness. Oh, it's a tough gig up here. I should be now saying, now for $5,000, who can remember my first word? You'd pay attention then, wouldn't you? For Christians, when our faith is repeatedly marginalised in public life, we can fall into the habit of compartmentalising our lives. We love Jesus in our private lives, but we shrink from acknowledging the kingship of Christ in our social life. I loved Marcus Labuschagne last week after the cricket final, where he said to the interviewer, "You know I am a man of faith." And I thought, okay, here it comes, here it comes. And then he seemed to avoid it for a while, and then he said, "And I thank God for the opportunities I've had." I thought, good on you, mate, good on you. Will Willimon, a theologian, asked this question of us: where is Jesus? Dr. Willimon says Jesus' primary residence is living on the streets. Jesus is waiting for his hamper on Tuesdays. Jesus is seeing if he can afford a coat in the op shop. Jesus is in the hospital, or more likely suffering and sitting because he can't afford to go to the hospital. And Jesus is in prison. There is no way we can misread what this gospel account says. Most certainly I tell you, inasmuch as you did it for one of the least of these brothers, you did it for me. In other words, wherever people are in need, wherever people suffer, wherever people do without their basic needs, Jesus is there. And he's not just there to comfort those who suffer, he's suffering right along with them. He warns us that out in the world every day, looking to find him in the heartache and the pain that surrounds us. Church is the place where we come to feed and nourish our spirits for this work, the work that calls us to minister him in very real and tangible ways. Christian writer Anne Lamott tells about her Presbyterian church outside San Francisco. This is the place where, not that long ago, Anne became a Christian. She says that Ken, not his real name, started coming to her church right after his partner died of AIDS. Ken had the disease as well, and Anne Lamott described him as an emaciated scarecrow of a man with a lopsided face that lit up when he smiled. Ken told the congregation that when his long-time partner died, Jesus entered into the place in his heart that was broken, and Jesus had not left. Over the year that Ken attended the church, he'd won almost everyone over. But there was a woman in the choir, Renola, a huge black woman from a southern evangelical background, who had always been taught that Ken's way of life, indeed Ken himself, was an abomination. To her, Ken was not just a suspect, but was someone to be avoided. One day during the hymn singing, the congregation got to its feet, except for Ken, who was too frail and weak to stand alone, and they all started singing, "His eye is on the sparrow." And when they began to sing the line, "Why do I feel discouraged? Why do the shadows fall?" Rinola began to cry. She left the choir and walked over to Ken. Rinola lifted him out of the pews and held him like a small rag doll. The two of them sang together and cried together. They were children of God together. Anne Lamott says she doesn't know if this episode constitutes a full-fledged, no-kidding miracle or not, but it's close enough for her. Jesus is sitting out in the world right now, waiting not for a church service to start, but for human contact, for caring, for love, the kind of love Jesus meant when he told us to love our neighbours. Be bold. Be a CHRISTIAN. The Lord be with you.